Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to True Crimes Podcast. Today is Sunday, August 23rd, 2015, and I have two crime authors back, Nick Vanderleek and Lisa Wilson, to discuss their latest book. Their, is it eighth book or ninth book on Oscar Pistorius? I forget now.
Good morning, Liz. The ninth one.
Ninth one, Fugitive. Good morning. How are you today?
We're great. How are you?
Good, good. So now, this book that you just wrote, Fugitive, what is different about this book from the previous ones you've written?
I'll let Nick speak first. We've got a slight delay with Nick, who's Skyping in from South Africa. But Nick, why don't you take that one and explain how Fugitive is different from the other eight?
Well, I guess very quickly the main difference is that Fugitive is an update.
So I'll answer a little bit about this. So the main idea with Fugitive when we originally talked about it was that Oscar, at the time we started talking about it, Oscar was about a month away from getting out of prison on probation. Essentially, he's got about, you know, four more years left on his sentence, and he would go spend that at his uncle's house and, you know, be under, like, house arrest. So we wanted to, you know, give the readers an update on what was happening with Oscar and kind of talk about what's next for him. You know, facing this appeal coming up in about 3 months' time, what would he do? You know, once he gets out on, and again, this is our thinking a month ago, you know, once he gets out and then, you know, this appeal takes place, what is he going to do? What if he gets sent back to prison again? Is he actually going to go? You know, what are his options? And so that was how it started out. But the more we talked about it, you know, we realized the concept of fugitive was a much larger concept in that, you know, when you actually interrogate Oscar's life, there's so many things that he's always been running away from. And so we got into this big discussion about what does fugitive actually mean? You know, what is he running away from? What are we running away from? And it became this big discussion about who Oscar is and what his intentions are, which greatly ties into the appeal, because the appeal really is all about what were Oscar's intentions and did the judge properly interpret them and apply them to the law? So that's kind of how fugitive evolved.
Yeah, did you, you know, and it's interesting, we just had some recent news on him as far as he was supposed to be released on August 21st, but then they changed their mind.
Yes, and it's really become a big political discussion in South Africa. The, you know, they made this decision, I guess, back in June, and at that time he had been in prison for about 6 months. That he would be released on, you know, good behavior. And that's, you know, that's fairly common for prisoners to serve 1/6 of their time. So, you know, 10 months would be 1/6 for him. And so his release date was going to be Friday the 21st. But, you know, so many people were up in arms about that. They felt that that was such a travesty for, you know, the crime that was committed. And, of course, a lot of people are unhappy with the verdict that he received, you know, getting culpable homicide as opposed to getting murder. So there was quite an uproar. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that August is Women's Month in South Africa. And the women's group made a huge, huge, you know, noise with the minister and basically, you know, asked for him to not be released. And so they started looking into it. And now they've, you know, they feel that maybe it wasn't lawful for them to make that decision 6 months in. They should have waited the full 10 months before they even decided on him coming home. But it's really hard to know what actually were the proper laws surrounding that, because it's become this much bigger political issues, so it's pretty muddy. And they're it doesn't mean he's not going to get out. He may, but they are just investigating it right now. I'm sure there's all sorts of legal positioning going on behind the scenes.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. So it looks like now he'll be staying in prison for his appeal.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we could find out next week that he's getting out. We really don't know. They've just got to work that all out and, make sure that it's not, this isn't just about Oscar, which unfortunately it is now. It's all about Oscar. But what about all these other prisoners? Are their probations being handled properly? That's the question that comes up. Is this a uniform system or does it, does it take care of the people it wants to take care of? So that's the bigger issue.
And Oscar was really taken care of, wasn't he? He seemed
Nick, do you want to kind of talk about Oscar and since he's been in prison and his entitlement and what we have to look forward to?
There's just a little bit of feedback when I speak. I can actually hear myself speaking, so it's a little confusing. It's kind of like an echo.
Okay. Well, give it a try. See what happens.
Okay, so I was watching a local news broadcast just with an inmate actually talking about what's happening with Oscar. And he's just saying, well, can you imagine that in terms of regular business, can you imagine, it's Women's Month or it's Father's Day or Mother's Day or whatever it is, and then you have ministers intervening and not letting prisoners go because someone's going to be offended. I mean, it would just be an absolute circus. But because Oscar's so high profile and because it is about scoring political points, they have scored some political points. So, that's the sharp edge of the sword, I guess, So, that's one aspect that's worth looking at. The other one is, again, that sort of lines up with that, is Oscar has not been the easiest prisoner to take care of. I'm pretty sure the prison authorities actually want him out of them. He's wanted a special bed for himself. He's wanted special food. He's wanted special a gym, special gym made for him, and also a bath was specially built for him. And beyond all that, he's in isolation, so he kind of has the run of the place, which is in the hospital wing, so he kind of has the run of the prison, and he's probably been exercising throughout, so he may actually come out strong than he went in, who knows, but that entitlement is still there, and I'm pretty sure he's seething now that he hasn't been, released on the day that he expected to, So I think he's pretty upset, but being upset and being vocal about it's definitely not going to help his case. So I think they're trying to play it cool for now, and I think we can actually expect maybe a quiet. But then you never know, the minister may dig in his heels and say, well, let's keep him behind bars until his appeal. Let's let the appeal decide. So let's see.
Okay, and in your book, how does he become so entitled, do you think, over his life?
That's a great question, and if you want to know the answer to that, definitely this is the book to read. We spent, in the last 8 books that we did last year, obviously we talked a lot about the crime, a lot about the court case, a lot about what we felt the motive was, all the main players, all of that stuff was discussed. And this book is really dedicated to Oscar the person. When you consider the crime and you look at the crime scene and the stories and the multiple defenses, it gets so confusing. But if you strip all of that away and you try to understand who Oscar is, which in itself is quite a daunting task, it's pretty fascinating what you come up with. And so we actually set out to kind of understand the psychology of Oscar. And we touch on things all the way from his childhood to the present day. We look at his psychology, his, you know, growing up, how his family affected him, how he chose or didn't choose certain athletics, you know, how his extended family, his uncles, you know, the money, all of that has affected him. And then ultimately how all of that affected what happened on the 14th and what happened in his court case. There's quite an enormous chapter in the book called Intentionality. And I think the readers are really going to enjoy that chapter because I think it really blows open who he is. And I don't think there'd be any question about what his intentions have always been as a person growing up and what they ultimately became. It's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, well, and one part I found very interesting is the contradiction to what his ex-girlfriend, how she described him versus what the test found. He took a psychological test, and in your book, you suggest that maybe he had some coaching.
Yeah, the you know, the testing doesn't ring fully true to either Nick or I. It really doesn't. I mean, there are so many examples of things in his life that do not add up with what they found on some of that testing. And you know, they even you know, admitted in court that they didn't. I mean, they really only spoke to a select number of people from Oscar's life. And I think they took a lot of stuff at face value without actually getting the full picture, without verifying a lot of things. You know, a lot of it was self-reported from Oscar himself. And, you know, they used a bunch of different things. They used not only medical testing, but they used, you know.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, look, one thing that's actually not in the book that I wanted in the book, and, you know, it's just, well, one of those things that I never really got in there was I really wanted to, you know, interestingly, with the psychological testing, the paranoia is supposedly normal. But you know what? We know even in jail that the Oscar is paranoid that his food's being poisoned, and so he's not actually eating the prison food. He's literally buying, you know, the food from, I think, tinned food from the cafeteria. But, you know, this paranoia isn't something that just started up in prison. It's been the, you know, another aspect that I think, you know, we can look at the paranoia in his everyday life, but I mean, there's been paranoia with the media, and perhaps understandably from the narrative that he's been trying to promulgate. But, you know, one can also sort of wonder, you know, was there paranoia, you know, like high amounts of paranoia going on when he was just really good, like literally she's in the toilet on anyway, but is he paranoid that something's going to happen that he can't control, and then that leads to this incredible reaction. So I think, you know, the paranoia and the schizophrenia was something we wanted to tackle, which we did to some extent. But just think about schizophrenia in terms of some day in and day out. So someone who's pursuing this able-bodied narrative all the time and the kind of schism that this must create in a person. You know, it's like a bald guy, you know, trying to make sure nobody knows that he doesn't have hair. You know, it's a constant battle and it's an inauthentic story. You know, it's the same thing that, you know, which we can all be tangential towards, you know, there's some of the sexuality. By not doing it, by keeping this aspect of themselves secret, you create much higher levels of paranoia than there would be, and much higher levels of circumspection to other people, suspicion towards other people. And kind of a schizophrenia where you're purposefully trying to be away from. And then you're the person you're trying to be. And this is part of what we're talking about in terms of being a fugitive, is running away from your true self, right, Lisa?
It is, yeah, absolutely. And to go back to, I want to touch on what Liz was asking about, like, the other girlfriends and why, you know, why some girlfriends experienced this and why some didn't. You know, with Oscar, there's definitely an escalation that you can see happening in his life, and that's not unusual. One of the most interesting things about the research that we do with true crime is understanding people and seeing how they become what they become. And, you know, most people don't just come into this world being a monster. There's a reason why they ended up the way that they did. And so, you know, you can see with Oscar this evolution of who he became and how it progressively got worse. And so I think some of his, you know, girlfriends from many years ago saw, like, you know, the kinder side to him, for lack of a better word. But you know, even then, I think if you were to ask some of them about his hot-headedness and his, you know, his selfishness, I think if they were being truthful, they would probably tell you that it existed then, too. But it definitely spiraled out of control. The more famous he got, the more pressure was on him. You know, the whole thing about getting into the Olympics, what that created, you know, when Samantha Taylor, his previous girlfriend prior to Reva, her and her mom wrote a book, and it's unbelievable some of the stuff they talk about in that book, who he really was behind the scenes, the meltdowns he was having. And so I think, you know, some people didn't get to see it to the full extent until, you know, those last few years of his life when everything just kind of came to a head. And the psychology of Oscar is fascinating. I think Nick and I both believe pretty strongly there's a lot more there that the family has probably hidden over the years, you know, as far as conditions that he actually probably really has and probably has been diagnosed. And this is speculation. I mean, we can't say that 100% for sure, but that's what we believe based on what we've seen with him.
Right. So you're thinking, you're stating that he may be schizophrenic, but his family and he would deny that, right?
Oh, I think they would definitely deny that, yeah. I mean, it's speculation. I mean, you look at his levels of paranoia, and they're excessive. But, you know, what's interesting is the defense tried to use that to their benefit, to say that's why he was so uneasy about hearing that bathroom window open, and that's why he shot so quickly, because he thought it was an intruder. So, you know, to some extent it plays into their version, but you could very easily look at it, you know, from like what Nick was saying. Say that again?
And also his version. I mean, what's really interesting is, you know, one of the typical ways, one of the symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia, besides delusions of grandeur, is also imagining sounds, you know, imagining and having hallucinations. And, you know, I don't actually believe Oscar's version, but it's interesting that his version of himself, his version of the crime, involves essentially an hallucination. It involves imagining a scenario which wasn't true. And so, in other words, it's an auditory and a visual thing. You know, he expects to see someone coming up a ladder to his window. He expects, you know, so I'm just saying that hearing voices, that those delusions are also quite common with paranoid schizophrenics. So I'm just saying that's interesting. Whether it's absolutely so is conjecture.
Mm. Yeah. But you know, we believe that obviously he knew he was killing Reva, and that there was quite a bit of paranoia that was involved in that, in what was going to happen if he didn't, if he allowed her to live, you know, the fear of would he be found out, you know, what was going to happen to him if she were allowed to tell the true story of who Oscar was and what happened that night.
So, and do you think he's getting the help he needs in prison as far as his, you know, medical, mental health? Or is he just being catered to?
Really. Well, I mean, I think, you know, this would be total opinion as well, but, you know, I don't, there's nothing to me that indicates Oscar wants to be a true person, you know. I mean, and it's hard to say. I mean, he's been out of visibility for 10 months now, but, you know, everything we know about him up through the time that he was, you know, dragged away to jail, like everything that he did in that courtroom tells me there's no sincerity in him to be a truthful person. So, the only help that I think he's getting is for him to be more comfortable, not to actually tell him the truth. Go ahead.
There has been a change where, sorry about that. There has been a change where I saw an interview where some prison officials, that's told on they counseled, basically just saying that Oscar initially was just like, I'm not talking to you, leave me alone, you know, like completely stand all the beach, like, I'm not involved, you know, and that was his initial reaction to the sort of regular counseling that he was supposed to receive, which was basically, you know, I'm not talking to anyone, I'm fine, and kind of just, you know, so obviously very suspicious, very afraid, very kind of, you know, trying to maintain his, same person said that, you know, over a period of time he became more relaxed, I guess, and then later on was, you know, having regular sessions, if you want to call it that, but I'm just saying it's interesting that there was this change, this sort of frightened animal initially. Excuse that analogy. And then also, you know, just sort of settling down a little bit later on. So the official also was kind of smiling when she was explaining it, which I think is quite interesting as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's on all sorts of medications. I know they testified to that when he was in court, that there was a number of, you know, anxiety and depression and stuff that he was taking. I'm sure he's still taking all of that, you know.
Wow, so what else could it touch upon in your book that would...
Well, you know, I just kind of mentioned the, I mean, like I said, the big thing about it is really looking at Oscar's intentionality from all different angles. And, you know, is this the kind of person who just lets life happen by chance? Do things happen by accident, or does Oscar create his own reality? And, you know, his entire life has been very intentioned. And I think we use some pretty good examples to illustrate that. But, you know, Nick shares some very personal stories about, you know, his own growing up in South Africa, you know, what it's like to live in South Africa with crime and what that does to you and what that does to your spirit. I think those are some pretty interesting stories that people will enjoy. And, you know, we do touch upon a little bit. We don't go into too much, but we go into the state's heads of argument for the appeal, and we are going to be doing some more books later in the year about the appeal that will be much more involved in, you know, talking about the legal aspects of what's actually happening now. We kind of touched upon it, but we will get into it much deeper as time goes on and we know more about the legal case that's going to happen, you know, in a few months.
Right, because you and Nick plan on being in court, right? Covering the trial.
Yeah,
I think what's interesting with Sorry, there's a terrible delay here, which creates a really confusing scenario. But what was really surprising for me, I think for you as well, narrative, we kind of got our spiel, we kind of know what we want to touch on. But often a lot of stuff sort of comes out of the woodwork that we don't expect, and then we use it, obviously. So what was interesting in this case was, I mean, we didn't know that Carte Blanche and Barry Bateman, who wrote Behind the Door, we sort of emphasized what they called new evidence, which was the candy cane toilet. It was basically just it just looked as though, you know, sometime after reverb bled into the toilet, it looked like it was flushed just because there were areas where the blood was washed away. And anyway, when in the week that Oscar was supposed to be released, you know, we know he wasn't ultimately, but Carte Blanche wanted to, you know, I guess, get the public's attention. And so they talked about this as new evidence. So, of course, you know, we already dealt with that in 2014 quite exhaustively. So it's not really new. It's also not new evidence in terms of the court. But I guess for the public, it may have been something new to think about. But what was interesting for us was revisiting some of those thoughts which we had a year ago and actually finding that our positions had shifted slightly, not so much around the candy cane issue, but more around something that I had a fair amount of certainty when I wrote Resurrection, which was the issue of the shots and then Oscar shouting, help. What's really interesting, moment in that crime, which just completely stands out, and it is Oscar literally shouting the word help 3 times, and it stands out like this red sun, because everybody mentions it. The witnesses say they heard a man shouting help 3 times. So one iota of constant evidence that really sticks out of a crime that is maybe it deserves to be somewhat confusing, but because there was a great argument going on for a long time and a cacophony of noise, and so it probably would have been confusing for witnesses, but I don't think it's quite as confusing as the judge has found it to be or the defense. So that is not an issue the way it's been portrayed. But what's really interesting for Lisa and I in Fugitive was, in Oscar's version, he shouted the word help 3 times after shooting Lever. And you have witnesses that say otherwise, that say he shouted help before the shots. And then you have other witnesses saying, confirming Oscar's version. And so it's one of the little mysteries in the Oscar narrative is, when did he shout for help? And it's quite important to know, because shouting help after shooting makes it seem like it's possibly part of the cover-up. Shouting help before makes it more, not necessarily, but it may confirm Oscar's version. So that I found quite an interesting debate. So, Lisa?
It is a debate, definitely. And I think, but then there's, Michelle Berger, who said, maybe it was a mockery. And certainly there was a lot of mockery going on that night, I believe, and the way that he behaved before and after the shooting. So, I believe that, the Stips, who were closest witnesses, directly behind his house, they testified to hearing intermingled male and female voices prior to the last set of bangs, which I firmly believe were the gunshots. I know the defense wants everybody to believe that it was the bat breaking down the door. I don't think there's ever going to be a time that I will believe those second set of noises were the bat and not the gun. I just think there's far too much evidence that pieces together that it was actually the gunshots that happened last. But, for me, I think the way that I can kind of get past that confusion about the help is the fact that both Berger, Johnson, as well as both Stips, all heard a male voice prior to the shooting, along with a female voice. And the fact that you can hear both a male and a female before the gunfire, which then resulted in total silence, I think is most damning. I think that's absolutely chilling to what happened.
Right, because that blows away his theory that he thought it was an intruder.
Well, yeah, that doesn't, everything about that crime scene, everything, the witnesses, the circumstantial evidence, the physical evidence, screams, this was not an accident. I just don't know how you can actually walk away from that and say this was an innocent circumstance of somebody drifting into the bathroom and shooting somebody because they thought it was an intruder. There's nothing that supports that. Zero.
And yet he still, so far, has only been charged with manslaughter. So it's very interesting.
Well, no, he was charged with murder, but he was convicted of culpable homicide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is going to be reviewed.
Yeah, really, really quickly, and this is an important point, is that what the state is appealing is not, they're not appealing the verdict of culpable homicide. They are appealing the acquittal of murder, and that's how they were able to go forward with this appeal. So they are trying to get that turned over and actually have him convicted of murder. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Yes, it will. Okay, we're running out of time. So any last words? before we
go ahead,
end
Nick.
Now, I would have known to make if I could.
Go for it.
Okay, cool. Okay, so, I think we need to sort of also acknowledge that Oscar still has supporters, and I actually heard one of them recently just explaining where the support comes from and how it comes about. And basically is that she feels that it was an accident and that she feels that Oscar never done any harm to anyone else. So that's why this was an accident. And of course, that's not true. We know that Oscar was a mark man, shoot his legs, and also, you know, he wanted to sue someone who was at a party, and so that whole idea that he's never done anyone any harm, including his fellow athletes, in terms of, you know, taking people's places and taking the attention away from them, et cetera, I don't think it's really true. I think he has caused a fair amount of harm to other people around him.
I agree completely.
Okay. Great. So the book is called Fugitive. You have it on sale on Amazon.com. Nick Vanderleek, Lisa Wilson, thank you for being on True Crimes Podcast.
Thanks, Liz.
Hey, bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.